Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at nissanusa.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with eight vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com. Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Yeah. Karen Reed, we're talking about that again today. Toxic relationships, specifically the narcissist playbook. It is almost painfully predictable. Gaslighting, manipulation, victim playing, and recruiting flying monkeys who help them attack or discredit anyone who dares oppose them. Karen Reed is accused in the tragic death of John O'Keefe. And from the interesting 10,000 foot perspective, seems to be following this playbook page by page. From controlled narratives and portraying herself as a whistleblower hero to weaponizing her supporters as flying monkeys against critics, Karen's tactics raise some pretty big red flags. But how can we recognize these toxic behaviors clearly, especially when they hide behind circles of innocence and conspiracy claims? Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is joining us to untangle this messy psychology behind Karen Reed's alleged narcissistic traits. We cannot, of course, diagnose her or say she is by any means, but we can say, this behavior seems to kind of resemble this type of behavior, and let you guys be the judge, but that's kind of where it's at. This is all kind of opinion-based and conjecture. Siobhan, when we're looking at this and just kind of what I've been seeing as this kind of textbook playbook stuff when it comes to narcissistic behavior, especially coming out of a narcissistically abusive relationship. I'm speaking on general terms. I'm not saying she was in one with John O'Keefe, but if she was, theoretically, this seems to be following a lot of it, not just in the terms of that the relationship, you know, ended and the breakup and all the things that go along with that and that type of dynamic, but John's dead. It feels like she's kind of following it almost like he was still alive in terms of the deflection and victim blaming and the flying monkeys. What's your thoughts on this case as we dive into this conversation?
You know, you can certainly read narcissistic traits here. I think you put that really well. And one of the things about narcissism, as with most things in psychology, it exists on a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so you find some people that are extremely narcissistic and other people that are mildly narcissistic. But that's a personality disorder in the cluster B section. And as you and I talk so often, the cluster B people are the intense, dramatic people who cause a lot of trouble in society. Mm-hmm. And the other personality trait that's cluster B that jumps out at me is the borderline personality. Mm-hmm. Because the borderline is characterized by intense, dramatic romantic relationships with a lot of jealousy and rage episodes. Mm-hmm. And that was what, when we got the list of those, you know, 53 angry, verbally abusive text messages, that looks so borderline to mm-hmm. me, even more so than narcissistic. But yeah. But as with most things in the cluster B categories, you can have traits that are blended from mm-hmm. these different disorders.
One could be narcissistic personality or even narcissistic personality disorder. One could be borderline. One could be both, essentially, and have a
bit of both. One could have traits of both, and they may not meet full diag. And mm-hmm. as you said, we don't know this unless you sit down and do an assessment with the person,
sure.
get their entire history, yeah. and you know, look at all these things. But one can certainly have traits from narcissism and traits from borderline, and so that's kind mm-hmm. of what jumped out for me.
Yeah, and we're not saying that Karen is this by any means. It's just a discussion of the topic of what these traits are. And my point on this is it doesn't make her a killer
if she
has these traits, but it certainly it explains a lot of things. It explains a lot of the reactions that we see that otherwise can kind of feel chaotic and out there, like, what are you doing? Until you kind of put it to the roadmap of these definitions, then I go, oh, this is why the reaction is like this. And then you can almost predict reactions based on those principles, which is what I've been finding very interesting as I break this case down and look at the relationship with John O'Keefe and Karen Reed. And there's a lot to break down here. Karen's public narrative about this whole thing, pretty much from the beginning, well, slightly after the beginning, before she, you know, after she was saying, I think I might have hit him, I could have, I might have clipped him, and he didn't look mortally wounded to me. Said a lot of kind of damning things at the beginning. We get to a lot of contradictions with Karen Reed, specifically about the night in question where everything happened. A narrative that begins with not even remembering dropping him off to then, oh, I dropped him off and I went home, to I dropped him off, I waited there, and I saw him get up to the door and stick his head in. Then it's, I got what was there, listened to the music for a while, listened to U2 specifically, and then saw him get in the house. And either A, I thought he was okay and he's going to go in there and I'm feeling sick, so I'm going to go home, to I'm really angry at him and I waited 10 minutes and left in anger. All of those things.
Yeah. And she was assuming he was in there having
yes.
sex with someone.
And you that know, too. And, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's such a borderline thing. And then the other piece of it, because people are complicated, mm-hmm. you throw in alcohol use disorder, which removes all ability to filter what we say. Mm-hmm. When people are drunk, they're unfiltered and more prone to this emotional, you mm-hmm. know, instability. So there's a lot that seems so odd. Mm-hmm. And yes, when you use the term flying monkeys, again, not a clinical term, but a social movement, this thing about everybody defending her and seeing her as this, you know, whistleblower and crusader for justice and mm-hmm. all of that. It has a really bizarre quality. That's, mm-hmm. I think, what makes this case so much of a circus.
My question on that is, I mean, her narrative has changed so many times. And now we've seen the judge is going to let all those clips from all those interviews into this trial. How they're going to be presented, that's up for anyone's guess. But if the jury is able to see them, they're going to see her contradicting herself left and right with all these public interviews. We certainly do know that narcissists, the narrative and their image is bar none the top thing on their list, no matter what, above kids, above anything and everything, really, above others' well-being, above anyone else's reputation. It doesn't matter as long as their narrative is the one that is what people are believing. But they don't seem to really get that, you know, people can compare past narratives. They can compare the past mm-hmm. things that you've said. And it's not like this is something where an opinion can change of, well, I think he did this or I think he did that. It's just flat out stating fact of what she saw or did not see. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't change. I mean, that's fact. That does not change. Right. How is it that they can so easily jump from one narrative to another or one story to another and so seamlessly do it without really expecting anyone to ask any questions? And when mm-hmm. they do, how do they react?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like there's this distorted perception of themselves and the scene and mm-hmm. other people and what happened. And that can fluctuate over time as they craft the story better. And we can wonder, are they even consciously aware that this is what they're doing? Mm-hmm. Or it's just kind of an emotionally driven, as you say, they want to give a good story. And so it can just sort of evolve and shift and changes depending on the mood of the day, right? And mm-hmm. what's gonna sound best.
And getting other people to go along with it. That's right. The other part. That's where you get the flying monkeys. Obviously, you have, mm-hmm. I really didn't think of the attorneys as flying monkeys. I don't know if they really, they're near that category. They're paid flying monkeys.
Yeah. If you will. Yeah. They're paid to fly. Yeah,
they're paid to fly. These are the professional flying monkeys that are there to run her narrative. But then you have just people out of their free will, not getting paid a dime, just wasting their own time or spending their own time, however you want to look at it. Some would say wasting, some would say you're wasting your life. But they're willing to go out there and do the bidding for this person. Most of them have never met her in her life. How does mm-hmm. someone like this, especially in this sort of a case, because sometimes you look at this with flying monkeys and it's usually the narcissist friends or family that mm-hmm. they'll spin the tail mm-hmm. to, and they're already built in. They're ready to go. They're ready to run with this. In this case, it's strangers that have signed mm-hmm. on to be flying mm-hmm. monkeys. How do mm-hmm. you do that? How do you get so many mm-hmm. people behind a conflicted story that is way out there?
Yeah, you know, people are drawn to conspiracy theories, and you see that in politics. You see it in so many other ways in our society. It meets a need for people to, you know, feel like it's us versus them and we're the good guys and we're going after the bad guys. And I think that a lot of the, you know, we've talked about the podcaster Turtle Boy, mm-hmm. and a lot of this has been whipped up in the media.
Yeah.
And it only takes a few people who start the ball rolling, and then you develop this conspiracy mindset in the whole community. And I have to say, it's surprising. It's you know, showing mm-hmm. up with the signs and the, you know, the intensity that you see people having. It is like a political rally, and it's mm-hmm. it's bizarre.
The people who get into this, where they are out there with the signs. I mean, and again, if you think she should be free and that she's innocent, that's one thing. It's going this extra crazy mile of harassing people and, you know, basically going bankrupt. We've heard some people they've come from other countries, their businesses are failing, but they're there because they think they're doing the right thing. They think they're being some sort of justice warrior for Karen Reed, despite reality being right there going, look at this. Is this really what you want to mm-hmm. get behind? Mm-hmm. Is that just cognitive dissonance where they just don't see it? Are they themselves narcissists? Do they possess a lot of narcissistic traits that allows them to have blinders on and only see a specific narrative? And what type of people are we talking about here that are able to be hijacked and their lives thrown to this cause?
Yeah, I wouldn't say at all that they're narcissists or pathological in any way, mm-hmm. but I think it shows a lack of critical thinking mm-hmm. and the ability to get out of this conspiracy kind of narrative that, again, I say people like it.
Yeah.
So it feeds this dopamine, you know, kind of hit that we're fighting, we're crusading, we're doing the right thing. And they're just not able to look at all sides and analyze carefully because it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Feels good. And that's so often what you see in political rallies where people come up with their slogan, their candidate, and it feels really good and empowering to mm-hmm. them. And sometimes people get crazy with it. You know, they take it to a violent extreme, and we see lots of that. So there's just a lot of problems, I think, in the human brain with our ability to think critically and not think with our emotions. You know, emotions are important, but when they're the driving force behind how we're interpreting reality, it can lead us astray.
Sure. Are people like this, I know you said not able to analyze, and I understand that we're like, some people just like, some people have no empathy and they're not able to feel empathy for others. So if they're going to try it, they're mimicking some sort of behavior. Mm-hmm. Are we talking that sort of not able to analyze, or just they're choosing not to analyze because that feel good behavior, either it just feels so good and I don't feel like going down this road, or it feels so good and I can't literally see the forest in front of the trees.
Probably both. I think there are some people that they're so emotionally driven, it feels good, and so they choose their story. You know, they choose their side just because now we have camaraderie, we're a group, we're doing the right thing, we're the whistleblowers, you know, we're going to take down this corrupt system, mm-hmm. whatever they see themselves doing. And so it's driven by their need to feel important. And unfortunately, this stuff is really common with all people.
Yeah.
You know?
Does it speak to a relation where people relate to Karen in terms of, if we talk about the voicemails, the angry tirade that she went on in Aruba on him for a family friend that he was talking to? This preoccupation that this person is cheating on you or having sex with mm-hmm. someone else. And the rage that comes with it. Are a lot of these followers necessarily relating to the sex part of it, but just she's very loud and she says what she wants. I mean, some people could take it that way, while others take it like this is unhinged and this is unhealthy behavior. Is it because they in their own lives exhibit very unhinged, unhealthy behavior, and then seeing someone else do this, well, that then kind of justifies it. It makes them not so alone in their own world.
That sure could be. It sure could be that they identify with her in various ways. But probably when you listened to those voicemails and heard about the Aruba incident and all of that, that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. This person has problems.
Yeah.
And why other people either choose not to see that or filter it out and just don't pay any attention to it, or, as you say, identify with it mm-hmm. is possible.
I want to ask you this. What is this I don't know if it's common in all of these situations. If we're talking about a female or a male, I guess my experience has been with female borderlines and narcissists. I feel like I can relate to John O'Keefe, not in the part that he's dead, but having been in long-term relationships with people with these disorders, this preoccupation with sex, that the partner is cheating on them. I don't know if it goes reverse mm-hmm. where men feel that about women. I'm sure it probably does in some cases.
It does.
Mm-hmm. But I had it with this preoccupation being accused of in the rageful ways that that John O'Keefe got in those voicemails, just completely mm-hmm. baseless, like mm-hmm. based on nothing other than extreme, it seems like, insecurity. But is it that? Where is that? Where does that come from? And why does it so often with borderlines and narcissists go to "you're cheating on me" when there's like mm-hmm. it's not even part of the conversation. It's not even mm-hmm. part of anything else. It's just suddenly this must be what's happening, and I believe that's the narrative, and I'm never going to get off of this idea, no matter how much proof is presented in front of me that this idea is impossible. But mm-hmm. I'm still going to go there.
It's complicated, and I think often it does speak of the person's insecurity and their sense that being, I think particularly for women, being seen as attractive and sexually appealing is their way of getting power in life, and it's very, very important to them to feel like their partner is completely 100% focused on them. And so there's always this fear. What if they start focusing on someone else? What if they're sexually involved with someone else? That means that I have zero worth And so that's one aspect of it that's troubling. Another aspect of it is projection, that they actually are considering, a relationship or the desire for one, at least with another person. So they assume that their partner is thinking the same way.
And so that
could be both.
That's an interesting one. That would be deflection, right?
I'd say projection.
Projection, yeah. Okay, of their own.
They're taking what's going on in their mind and saying, well, I think you're doing this.
And does that mean that they are actively doing this? I mean, in the Karen Reed case, we can see there's evidence that when she's leaving these angry voicemails accusing John of cheating on her, she's actively trying to solicit one of his friends to come sleep with her.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think that's it's attention getting. It's how she feels loved. It's having that somebody who's pursuing her sexually feels good. Mm-hmm. But then, yes, the projection comes in. Well, because I'm thinking that way. She may not be acting on it, but if she's thinking about it, she's assuming that that's what he's doing.
We've only obviously seen a sliver of their relationship, what has come out in relation to this trial. And so we've seen some of her voicemails or listened to some of her voicemails, 50 calls in total that night. I believe 8 voicemails left back to back for the most part or in somewhat sequential order. And with a lot of hate in there. You're a loser. I hate you. I'm here with your effing niece and nephew or your effing kids. Those were some of the key ones in there. Mm-hmm. And the kids one stood out to me because even in interviews, when you watch her talk about the kids, she's never like, he's such a wonderful person for taking these kids in, he's a, whatever you want to say. You would probably say something positive. It immediately, in every interview I've seen anyway, it's not about John's goodness as a human being. It's how do the kids affect her? And it's never very it wasn't an ideal situation. I don't know exactly. I don't have the exact quotes in front of me, but I'm paraphrasing. It was something to that effect. Well, it's not an ideal situation, but John has the kids and, it was an underlying annoyance, you could tell, least that's my take on it. What is that? I mean, especially when you're talking about kids and you're the girlfriend. Or even if you're the wife and he has kids from a previous relationship, or in this case, his deceased brother and sister's kids, because they died. And he's taking care of them, took them in to love them and help them stay within the family and raise them the way that his brother and sister-in-law would want him to have that done. That rage that someone has towards that sort of a thing, it just seems like that would know no end if you're willing to go down that road as the partner complaining about that sort of thing.
Yeah, it in at least in the interviews we've seen, we don't see empathy. We don't see grief. We don't see, that she's really concerned about how the kids are doing now. Mm-hmm. And all those things we think if someone we loved died, there would be a different emotional tone to it. Rather than watching her leaving court, I believe it was yesterday, in just some news footage, and the smiling, the laughing, the confidence, I know that she said in the documentary, well, everybody's analyzing my expressions and what I'm doing. Well, yeah, everybody is.
Yeah.
But you don't look at her and see a grieving woman at this point. You see somebody who's like, leading the team and we're going to beat this. And she's grinning at the time. I try to put myself in that position. I don't think I would be looking like, this is a sporting event and we're having a party here.
Yeah. That's what's been disturbing. And it's funny because the argument that I've seen her make and her team make is Karen can't win. If she's sad, she can't win. If she's happy, she can't win.
Yeah.
And I agree with that to a certain extent. But this just seems like Karen's being Karen. This doesn't seem like she's like trying to put on a super happy show just so people don't look at her while she's being sad. And I'm not saying she has to go act super grieving. I mean, it's been quite a while by this point, so I think you may have a lot of that out of you. But the circus-like nature of it.
It's bizarre. I had a husband die in 2004, and I can talk about that very easily and openly. Sure. But I never smile when I'm talking about it. It's not a happy subject. It's something that stays with you forever when you lose a partner by death. And I don't know that I've ever seen anybody that is grinning about this and saying, well, you know, it was a long time, so I'm over it now. And it's like, it just, it doesn't play well.
I thought it was interesting how she, in the voicemails, if she didn't know that he was dead, but she also did say he didn't look mortally wounded on the Dateline, where I thought that was an interesting comment, because it kind of, I thought, Freudianly slipped in there when she was talking theoretically and then stating out a flat observation and then going back to theoretically talking. She, in those voicemails, had said, you know, your kids are home alone. I'm leaving. I'm going back. Your kids are home alone. Almost to guilt him to go back home. It seemed rather bizarre to go down that road, considering she's an adult. And if you know that there's these kids that are there alone and he's not back, there was no worry for his safety. There was no, I hope you're okay. I don't know what's going on, John. I'm going to hang out here with your kids until I hear back from you, because that would be the right thing to do. Right. It was still all about her. She was tired. Yeah. She was feeling sick, so she had to go. Abandon children, even though she never really did. She did not leave the kids, but she threw it out there like she did. And that seemed rather manipulative.
Very manipulative.
On that moment in time, to like almost like question his ability as a parent.
Yeah. And you know, how much of that was being intoxicated, how much of that is just her style. And a lot of it may be both, you know, but it's disturbing. And again, where's the empathy and the concern? I mean, obviously I think it shows that she did not know he was dead. You know, because you wouldn't be spilling all this stuff, directing it at someone that you think is going to listen to this if you kill them. I mean, you could say a really sophisticated murderer might leave a voicemail.
Sure.
Like, you know, hey, honey, whatever, thinking, well, this will fool everybody. Mm-hmm. But you don't make 53 raging calls if you know the person is, oh, well, I hit him with my car and he's dead now. I don't think that adds up.
But she was thinking he wasn't mortally wounded, which, again, I find that part very odd. What's your thoughts? I don't have the clip readily available, but do you know what I'm talking about? Dateline, Dennis Murphy is talking to her. She's basically going through a laundry list of, I didn't know what was going on. And I'm just paraphrasing here. Like, did I hit him? I might have clipped him with the car. I mean, it seemed like I could have that, but I didn't know what happened. He didn't look mortally wounded, but I mean, maybe could I have a clip? Like, it was just kind of nuggeted in there between theory and he didn't look mortally wounded. It wasn't, you know, had I looked back and I didn't see him mortally wounded, I didn't see him mortally wounded. That's a weird one to me.
That is very weird. Yeah. It doesn't fit the rest of the narrative at all.
Yeah.
So that's what you look for when, you know, is someone telling the truth? You look for consistency in what they say and the way that they tell the story. And if people are lying, there are typically little things that leak out that are inconsistent.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if that was one of them, and how a story goes from that to it's impossible. I could not have hit him.
Right.
I don't know how you get there, especially if that's not your initial story. That's always been rather bizarre to me. Excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah. And the place I always go back is if I had to make a guess, my guess is she doesn't know. And she now has latched on to a story that's going to hopefully keep her out of prison. And she's going to fight this and, you know, continue her current narrative. But, you know, it's one, as we've said before, we may never know exactly what happened, which is too bad.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, that's the saddest part about all of this. I want to talk about that before we talk about John for a moment. Just the possibility here, or if it's even a possibility, where we go from blackout drunk, not even remembering being at the house, every iteration in the middle, to, I saw him go in the house. I was listening to music really loud, specifically U2 on the radio was blaring, and having very vivid memories of everything that was going on, including her emotions from minute to minute, from initially not even having any cognition that she was even there. Can that happen? Can the memories come back later and you're putting that together and they're accurate? Or what exactly is going on in her mind, do you think?
Yeah, as you know, as much alcohol as she had ingested, and you can look upright, functional, and still be in a blackout, it doesn't add up that she would be having these detailed memories now. And earlier have been so confused about where she was and what he did and what might have happened. It doesn't add up. Now, can people convince themselves of a story and start to remember things that weren't actually the way it was? Definitely. And that's the problem with memory. People can have false memories.
I got the piece here. I'm going to see if I can just throw it over quick. And we can take a look at what this looks like. Stand by. I think it'll probably work about there. This is that piece from Dateline where we hear her talk about not mortally wounded.
I didn't think I hit him, but could I have clipped him? Could I have tagged him in the knee and incapacitated him? He didn't look...
Oh, and it buffers right there.
Mortally wounded, as far as I could see. But could I have done...
Of course.
Something that knocked him out and is drunk.
So, I mean, that's the context of it.
Yeah.
You see, it was all
powerful.
All wrapped up into one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really powerful. And so, yes, I think one could make the case that that is the truth, what she was speaking there. She doesn't know. She didn't think she killed him, but could something have happened? Sure. And that speaks to me of somebody who really does not remember what she was doing. And therefore, anything she says now is probably not reliable.
Does she believe what she's saying, you think? When she goes down her narrative of this is what I think happened, did she convince herself that it's impossible that she hit him? Do you think there's still a level of something in her that makes her on the fence going, I don't know, maybe.
Boy, that would be an interesting one to do an interview with her and try to get to the bottom of it. You know, clinically, like a therapist type interview.
Yeah.
That would be a really interesting one to explore, because it's possible that it's either. It could be that she does have lingering doubts, but boy, she does not want to go to prison. Don't blame her for that.
No,
I don't want to go to prison either. Hoping I don't ever run over somebody and end up in this kind of a situation. But, you know, she may truly have convinced herself of a story, and her memory has filled in with bits and pieces that validate the story, even if she doesn't actually, they're not legitimate memories.
Our minds are good at playing Mad Libs, isn't it? Aren't they?
Oh, my God. So much. We fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
We fill in the blanks. Yep.
Let's talk about John O'Keefe for a second and the dynamic there, because if you've never been in that sort of a relationship, if you're an empathetic person, you're lucky. But number two, why is it that it seems very empathetic people, very giving people, selfless people like we know of John O'Keefe tend to fall for individuals that are narcissists? Again, not saying Karen is one, but I'm just saying empathetic people, they find this sort of relationship, somehow it's appealing to them, the empathetic person, and it's appealing to a narcissist because of various dynamics here. Can you explain that? Because on the surface, I think people go, well, it seems so different types of people. Yes, but...
Yeah, they do tend to find each other. I think that we have in the past sort of pathologized the more empathic partner, the empathetic person. And I don't think that's fair, because they will often look at people and see the best in them. And no matter how awful the narcissistic, borderline, psychopathic person, no matter how awful they are, they present a good side. Otherwise, nobody would be in a relationship with them.
Yeah.
And so the empathic partner will look at them and see their best qualities and see that these anger outbursts or these negative qualities, well, that's something that I think can change eventually, or when they're under less stress, or there's always this sense of the future will get better.
Yeah.
Because they think the best of people. And that's not pathology. You know, mm-hmm. that's a character trait of being empathic. And maybe making excuses for them, you know, that, oh, well, they've got a condition right now, or they're in a bad job, or there's something going on in their lives that's causing this. But that's not really who they are, mm-hmm. because it's hard for an empathic person to put themselves into the mindset of a person with a personality disorder like this. It's mm-hmm. hard to imagine that somebody who can be so wonderful and loving actually has a very malevolent streak. It's hard to believe. And some people see it fairly soon in the relationship, and they've got a lot of ego strength and they get out of it. But believe me, I've been a person too who stayed in relationships too long yeah. that were like that, because I always thought that the real person is the good side, mm-hmm. you know, and there is this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing going, because if there wasn't a good side, nobody would be in a relationship with them. Yeah. But the other thing, these relationships can be so intense and dramatic. When it's good, it's really good. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. But unfortunately, those good parts over time become fewer and far between.
Mm-hmm. And again, we're not saying Karen is a narcissist or narcissistic personality disorder or borderline or anything like that. We are discussing these traits that people have and taking a look at actions and going, some of these seem somewhat similar. We can't diagnose. We can't do anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just trying to figure out how this brain is working. Let's talk about the Aruba thing for a minute. That was another trip that they went on, John and her and some family members and friends. And there was an incident there where John was talking to a family friend who was female. And the allegations go that Karen came into the room where that conversation was going on, I believe in a public space. I believe it was a bar yeah. or a restaurant.
Yeah.
And freaked out. Just went off on John O'Keefe, according to the allegations, accusing him of cheating on her, you know, and this and that. And it's like, this is not that at all, mm-hmm. but didn't take the time at all to even see it. And I'm focusing on that interaction, but I'm also focusing on the fact that this was should have been a good time. This should have been a celebration, a holiday. I mean, that's what a lot of people call it when you're on vacation. I'm on holiday. Mm-hmm. And they do tend to cause chaos on holidays, literal holidays, really anything that's special to someone else or that they're having a good time. It seems that that's an open window to come in and, you know, knock everything down and scream and have a fit. That seems to fit this. We don't know what other holidays were like with Karen. I'd be really curious. I would be actually kind of shocked if there wasn't similar type things going on where drama ensues. But that seemed to be another interesting facet of this going, oh, she's following that playbook too, at least from what we can see on the surface here.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that immediately popped into my mind when you said holiday, people are partying.
Yeah.
And you throw the alcohol factor in again. Mm-hmm. And if Karen was, let's say, a bit intoxicated or a lot intoxicated, and she was just triggered again because this is her thing, John, and playing around sexually or whatever. And I did watch that testimony with the woman mm-hmm. who we can say was the victim in that situation,
yeah.
just a family friend. And it was bizarre. It came out of nowhere. And that, again, could speak to somebody who their prefrontal cortex is shut down because they've had too much to drink.
I was going to ask, I mean, how does alcohol affect narcissists and borderlines? Does it make them, I mean, it's probably an individual basis, but maybe you can answer, does it make them worse? Does it make their symptoms, their ways of seeing things that are totally out of bounds of the reality prism worse?
Yeah.
Or does it,
yeah.
does it make them more tolerable to be around?
And yes, that can be a case-by-case basis, but I think what we know about alcohol is it shuts down the thinking brain.
Yeah.
And so you go right into this emotional, primitive way of perceiving the world, and people misperceive things, and then they don't have the capacity to filter what comes out of their mouth.
Yeah.
And that's why you see so many fights in bars, right? If
sure.
everybody was sober, things that would not have been a big deal become a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's... I don't know. I'd love to see Karen, talk about that. That doesn't seem to ever come up.
No,
really.
No.
Significantly, that alcohol was going on here, and that affects the way people perceive reality.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of the pieces of this case where we're looking back at interactions, alcohol is always a factor, at least for the most part, in most of them. Yeah, I wondered about that in my own experience. I got to say, it's like it made them a little more tolerable.
At times, if they can find a happy spot in their brain, right, and just get up and dance freely, and you know, smile and be jovial. If it goes that direction, but it can also go the direction of I saw you talking to an attractive woman, and now I know that you're playing around.
And boom.
Now I'm going to blast you. Yeah. So you don't ever know who you're going to get.
No, no, you really don't. I completely agree with that. It's in a very fascinating journey we're going into here. It's going to be very fascinating to see what exactly the jury ends up hearing, how many contradictions they see of Karen. Again, none of it makes her a murderer, but it explains behavior. That's what I found interesting about this. Not that it's tying her to intentionally killing her boyfriend, because I don't think that was ever
no.
the goal.
I've watched a lot of the trial, I've watched the interviews, and if I had to make a guess, I don't think she's a murderer. I mean, I really don't. That's just my personal opinion. I think there are other problems, and that's what makes this such an interesting, unusual case. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of other factors. But do I see this as an intentional act of trying to kill him? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I agree.
If true crime is your obsession, we've got you covered. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today for nonstop coverage, expert insights, and in-depth analysis.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com. Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.